This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Pete Futek.
Great, with a capital G, at the highest level of grade.
Publisher of College Football News.
What is it that makes our military superior? He was like, that's easy. We're the only football-playing nation in the world.
He hates your favorite team.
Rankings don't matter at the end because they're just going to put Alabama in the college football playoff anyway.
Pete Futek on the Score.
Let's talk college football with Pete Futek, who is on Twitter, at Pete Futek. He is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, and there he is on Twitch. I see him. Hello, Pete. How are you?
What's happening? How's it going?
It's good. You can check him out at twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. So Big Ten football is upon us. How representative is it going to be? How close are these teams with everything that all has been said and done and opt-outs and with everything else that's going on, how close are these teams to what we thought they were going to be, I don't know, 6 months ago?
Yeah, in terms of personnel, it's pretty close. I mean, you have a couple opt-outs here and there, but a lot of the main guys came back in, like Rashad Bateman, a first-round caliber wide receiver from Minnesota's back. Rondale Moore, who's kind of like this year's Henry Ruggs for Purdue, he's back in. So a lot of the guys came back once there's football again. And, you know, look, forgetting all the controversy and how we got here and all the other parts about this, look, I've lived pretty much my entire life on or around a Big Ten campus. We have Big Ten football this weekend, so I am prepared to go fully meatball and just blow off everything else and be like, great, hey, we're going to watch these guys do this. And it's after this first few months of college football so far, it's been a little shaky, but all right, now the Big Ten's back, and I can tell from traffic and everything else, the interest is more than there at this point.
What are we really doing here, though? I mean, how is it, you know, Michigan just decided they're going to lock everybody down? Wisconsin is terrifying right now in what's happening with the hospital capacity and the transmission of cases. How long is this going to go before it's inevitably shut down due to postponements and positives?
I don't think it is. Look, you know, this is the one part about this whole equation that that nobody really kind of planned for. With it was kind of like, okay, well, we're going to run colleges as we know it, and once we start having breakouts and once you can't do classes and the optics are going to be weird, how do you possibly have college football when the students aren't even going? Look, you know, anecdotally, every student I know, including at Big Ten campuses, has got it, and it's like, it's just kind of part of the deal. You get it, and then you go out and, hey, we're able to be indestructible now and that whole kind of thing. And college football's just kind of rolled on. It's the part of this that we didn't really factor in, that on the one hand, you have a global pandemic. It's really awful. All the optics are horrible. And on the flip side, yay, college football. And it just, it's kind of unseemly in every way possible, but it's just marching on no matter what. And I don't think it stops, to the point of where you mentioned Michigan, where they're saying we don't have classes, we don't have students who are, we have students who are on lockdown, but we're kind of doing this so we can also have college football at the same time. It's bad on every other level, except for the fact that the sport itself is going to be happening. And at least it might be a diversion if we want to make some sort of lemonade out of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I wish I could just sort of blithely say, oh yeah, college football rolls on as this is all going on. But to me, it still comes down to the responsibility. Obviously, college students themselves, they say, oh well, we got it and now we're fine. First of all, we don't know that because we don't know what it's doing to human bodies and won't know for a long time. And second of all, it's a pandemic. It's contagious. other people, another people who have less symptoms or no symptoms or who are otherwise healthy are therefore able to transmit it. And that's why people across Wisconsin in nursing homes, et cetera, are dying. Like, human beings are literally dying. And because college, yep. because no one really runs college football, this is the conference where everybody complained and whined and bitched and sort of got their way because people are just were maybe tired of hearing it or they just, I don't know. None of it really makes any sense to me.
Yeah, it's you're right. The problem with this becomes there's two other sides of this, which is on the one side, the football players themselves, if they're testing negative and are okay, they're actually probably safer than the rest of the student body because they're not in a literal bubble, a bubble of mm-hmm. football, but they are in a sort of a set routine where they are constantly medically supervised and it's being hammered in their heads to be safe, be safe, be safe. So the players themselves and the football guys themselves are actually sort of okay compared to the rest of the student population. It's the sight of the fans in the stands that's weird. Because even NFL games, you don't really have, maybe, you know, Jerry World you do, but in most places you don't have fans, or if you do, they are so spread out that at least it seems like it's all right. Every shot of every game, the director's finding shots of people in stands with the masks with their, you know, under their nose or just not at all. And it just kind of is like, and then you're immediately thought, you can't, this is not right that you're having all these packs of people in these stadiums together. But the football on the field is okay. But then you get the other side of this is, college football now is unfortunately kind of become the norm where it's like, okay, these two teams can't play this week because there's a COVID outbreak on the team. And okay, we'll just kind of keep marching on. And it's just really sort of odd. But that's everything. I mean, that's the NFL now. That's every aspect of life. It just seems a little more unseemly because college athletes and college sports are just a different sort of thing when you're talking about 18 to 23-year-old kids.
Is this just Ohio State and everybody else when all is said and done?
Probably. The one part about this that's the issue on a football related side of this is look at the SEC and look at college football in general. This year is a humongous year for the gambler types because all the underdogs are coming through, all the overs are coming through. Everyone's kind of guessing on these lines for the Big Ten. It's like you can say, yes, of course, Alabama's 100 miles better than Nebraska, but LSU was supposedly 100 miles better of Mississippi State. Arkansas was supposed to go 0-10 and be double-digit underdogs in every game, and all of a sudden they can actually play college football and be pretty well. Because what we don't know is who's in shape, who's not, who can tackle. You know, maybe because the Big Ten starting later, these guys are in better shape than the rest of the college teams were to start the season because these guys didn't have their win. You can kind of see some teams had it and some teams didn't, and a lot of them just now are starting to get their legs. So right now when it comes to lines and teams and what we know, okay, you know, this might be that everyone's guessing. So either everything goes to normal and these lines are way off and the favorites are going to blow them away, or you're going to get something crazy like, you know, a Purdue beating an Iowa or an Indiana getting by Penn State.
Which has the bigger, more interesting quarterback question, Michigan or Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin's a little bit cut and dry only because when Jack Cohn is healthy, he's probably still the guy. The controversial part about that is Graham Mertz is probably the most talented quarterback recruit the program ever has gotten. So if he's great from the start, I think he's going to be the guy because there's a quarterback who could have gone to Alabama. He could have gone anywhere, and he's at Wisconsin. It's not the type of quarterback that the Badgers usually get. Michigan's also, it's a little bit hard because the Michigan quarterback situation's always hard, and it's one of the weirder things under Jim Harbaugh. Here's the guy who created Andrew Luck. He's the one who discovered and made Colin Kaepernick an almost Super Bowl winning quarterback. He is a quarterback guru, and they've never been able to fix quarterback. You want to know the problem with Michigan compared to, say, Ohio State? Ohio State lineage, you have, you know, Justin Fields, JT Barrett, Dwayne Haskins, right down the line of great quarterback after great quarterback. Michigan hasn't had that, but this kid Joe Milton, he has got all the tools to be fantastic, but they have not gotten consistent quarterback play yet under Harbaugh there.
What's going to look different about a Northwestern offense with a new coordinator? Because last year was really, My TV wanted to turn itself off when I put them on.
Yeah, they might actually do this whole scoring thing that the kids are all into. It's a crazy concept that maybe you might want to, you know, move the offense a little bit and score. It's going to be faster, quicker tempo. The fundamentals of Northwestern are and were strong. The lines are great. The offensive line is good. The defense was solid enough last year. But as you said, that offense just couldn't do anything. Peyton Ramsey, a grad transfer from Indiana, might help out the quarterback situation. They have a decent backfield. The receiving core is a little shaky, but the offense should be a little bit better. But it's still going to be Northwestern. It's still going to try to muck it up, drag you down to its level, play Pat Fitzgerald style where, you know, do everything right, own the time of possession if you can, own the turnover battle, play great defense, hang around, and then goal. This Northwestern's probably going to be one of those night and day different better teams this year, depending on how they are shape-wise.
Meanwhile, Illinois is getting 20 points in Friday night's matchup against aforementioned Wisconsin. Hard to believe it's already Lovie Smith's fifth year in Champaign. And where are reasonable expectations now?
Bad. I don't see it. Unless there's something crazy this year. It's, once again, it's not only just the fifth year of the Lovie Smith era. This is like the fifth rebuilding year in the Lovie. They're always going, it's like they're in a perpetual youth movement where they keep trying to find all these young players. They're starting 22 is okay. They're going to be good enough to, on the right day, kind of like it happened last year where they came through late against, I believe it was Michigan State, and certainly in that game against Wisconsin where 19 things had to go wrong at the end and they pulled it out late. But they just hung around, and you know they pulled it off. Illinois this year, talent-wise, they're not really quite there with even Iowa, much less Wisconsin. But you know, we'll see. I'm really curious on Friday night. I think it's going to be just as simple as with a new quarterback, new running back, a lot of new parts for Wisconsin. They're going to rely on a great defensive front, and they're just going to be Wisconsin. They're just going to run the ball 80 times, hold the ball for 74 minutes, and just say, okay, Illinois, you're just never going to have the ball.
Outside of the Big Ten, there is a story in Austin that is interesting on a lot of levels, and it has to do with the song, The Eyes of Texas, what it means, what it's about, who can be required to sing it, and there are a lot of strings connecting a lot of aspects of our current climate to what's going on at the University of Texas. What do you know about it?
Yeah, I did. Deep, some of my really old school alumni friends from Texas who I just assumed were going to be like, you know, it's Texas, you know, we're doing this song. They're conflicted. This is not an easy one. This is not as cut and dry as like saying we have to ban Confederate flags at a Ole Miss game or change the name of a Washington football team or, you know, any of the more basic, you know, easy ones that we know. Because the song itself isn't actually that bad. And as we've joked about before, once you get in like the third or fourth verse of any college fight song, it gets a little racist maybe. There's maybe a line about slaughtering Native Americans or something like this.
Or that's our national anthem when you start getting into some of the other verses.
Yep. Or the person who created the song is a Nazi sympathizer. There's always something weird when you get into something that's been around for over 100 years. The song itself is kind of okay, except for the fact that it does totally rip off I've Been Working on the Railroad, which has its politically incorrect tinges, but that's not really even the problem here. The song was created by a bunch of students who performed a kind of a minstrel series variety show in blackface back in 1903. Yeah. So there, it's several sides to this. So the song isn't bad. The people who performed it over 100 years ago kind of, sort of did it.
No, that's not, kind of, sort of.
But 100 years ago, but you can kind of see the problem here. So you've got the old school alumni base who, the big time donor class, who have had the Eyes of Texas in an infinite loop in their head since birth, being like, wait, I cried on the sidelines with my grandpappy on this song. You know,
it's the Chief Illini Wax stuff.
Well, except the difference being is that it's not directly a mascot or a person that needs to be canceled out. It's more of the performance of the song. But on the flip side of that, like, if you want it, it's a fight song. Like, come on. Like, if you're going to feel weird every time it's played, then just change it to something different. But it's a big enough controversy where you've got a south end of an end zone that's not totally built yet. You've got a really rich alumni base that are going to pull their funds if they don't do this. You've got now the new culture of recruiting where you're going to have a smarter, more informed, more, you know, I don't want to use the word woke, but a more socially conscious group of players who are going to come in, especially at Texas, where you usually get guys with brains who are going to be like, I'm not going to Texas because you've got this sunk. Forgetting the fact that if you're going to Texas in the first place, the city that you're in is named after a guy who kind of sort of made slavery happen in the state of Texas. So the whole thing is got so many different nuances to it, and it's a problem because either you keep the song and you keep the money from all the really rich Jim Bob boosters, or you ditch this, but at the same time, you lose a lot of the top recruits that you could probably get. And it's just, there's a whole slew of problems with this. It is really one of the more interesting sports controversies because there is no direct cut and dry answer except for, yeah, don't play the song and then just ditch the money.
Well, here we go with Big Ten college football, and I have to be honest with you. I know this is what you do. I know this is your, you know, your professional life is college football. I'm having a difficult time with it. I'm finding it incredibly directly representative of mass American stupidity and ignorance, more so than any other sport, than anything we're seeing, more so than any professional sport, that this one, these stadiums, the way the fans are behaving, the way coaches are behaving, the fact that it's sort of rudderless and leaderless, and that's allowed people to compel the free labor back to work for them as campuses are getting shut down. It's going to be tough for me to find that place again.
I am with you. And the problem with it also is it's kind of like, up yours in your face when it comes to college football, and a lot of the culture of people are like, it's just a fad. This thing is going to go away. We're on the right side of this. And it just kind of shoves it in your face, as opposed to like the NFL, where these are grown men with jobs and they're getting paid lots and lots of money. And I'm not trying to justify this the other way, but the players don't have to play. You know, they should be getting paid. They're not getting proper, but they fought for this. We saw this all summer. We saw the parents. We saw the players. The "we want to play" movement. The players want to be out there. And whether we think it's right or not, and it looks bad, and the nuance and the optics of this are bad in so many ways, they're choosing to do this. So in that level, yeah. But to your point, again, I have the bigger problem with just the fan bases, like the Florida, like Dan Mullen saying, "Oh, we want 90,000 people in the stands," and you know, just the flaunting, "Oh, we're not going to, we social distance and all, we don't do that kind of thing down here." And it just the look of it from a national standpoint compared to other sports just looks really unseemly.
But here we go. It's Wisconsin, Illinois, Friday night, under the lights. Pete Futek.
As we've learned, once the ball gets kicked off, you know, everything else tends to kind of fade away. But yeah,
I know this is our world of cognitive dissonance. Few, thank you, man. Appreciate it. Good help.
Anytime, Dan.
That is Pete Futek, college football news, longtime friend of the station.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.